This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Elliot Jackson, football writer for Yorkshire Live, and I'm joined, as always, by George Smith. How are you doing, George?
I'm not bad, mate. How's things with you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Just me and you flying solo today. Tom's having a few internet troubles in his new house, so he will be back next week for the long-awaited and highly anticipated 1-24s, which we do love doing every year. We've already had some questions on social about when they're coming. That will be dropping next Monday, so make sure you're subscribed to this podcast feed to make sure that drops straight in your podcast app as soon as it goes live. As always, a quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast feed, which you can find on all your usual platforms, and to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ChampChatPod24. Just going to point you in the direction of our new giveaway that we are running as well on social. If you go on our Twitter account again at ChampChatPod24, you'll see that we are giving away any championship strip for the new upcoming season if we hit 1,000 followers between now and the end of the transfer window, which is midnight on September 1st. So go drop us a follow, retweet the tweet, and you'll be entered to the prize draw where we will give away any championship strip for the upcoming season. So win-win situation. In today's episode, and we'll also be giving our thoughts on a chaotic week for Swansea City after their departure of Steve Cooper, and we'll assess the latest transfer news across the division.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
Steve Cooper left Swansea City this week after the club agreed to mutually terminate his contract. Cooper had 1 year left on his deal, and despite leading the club to back-to-back playoff finishes and within one game of the Premier League last season, the club have decided to part ways. Lots of background and lots of the sort of fallout from this has followed the decision which broke middle of last week, that Cooper was going to leave. I think everyone was left with the questions of why. I think a lot from the background and the issues upstairs have sort of fallen out in that time. The main reason behind his departure being the imminent departure of captain Matt Grimes, who's set to join Fulham in a £4 million deal this week. But when you complement that with the fact that obviously Andrew Ayew's gone, given his 70 grand a week contract wasn't renewable. Freddie Woodman's gone back to Newcastle. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Mark Guay's been gone back to Chelsea and since been sold on to Crystal Palace. Can sort of understand why he's walked, George.
Yeah, it's a very, very dour situation at the minute for Swansea City. And after coming so close to achieving the ultimate goal last season, it seems like they're going to start the new season in complete disarray. It really, from whatever angle you wish to look at it, none of it looks healthy, none of it looks positive. And as you say, they've lost so many important components within what was such a successful team last season. Not only the manager, but also so many key players within that squad. And you've just reeled off some of the names there. Woodman, Ayew, Guay, Hourihane. There's so many that they've lost. And now we see Matt Grimes, the skipper's on his way to Fulham. So it's just all completely unravelled. And you have to question where Swansea go from here. There's been a lot of talk of John Eustace getting the job, formerly in charge of QPR for a short while. And for me, it just strikes me as a really underwhelming, uninspiring appointment if it goes through. But it's just a case of what can Swansea do that's realistically going to get them in the best possible shape to start the season in a little over a week's time. So it's not come at a very good time for anybody associated with the club and with the captain now on the verge of going as well. It really does ask questions about where on earth Swansea go from here and what realistically are their aims for this coming season.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a huge loss for Swansea. And I've been very vocal on this podcast in the last year of my praise for Steve Cooper. I think he's done an absolutely fantastic job with the resources available to him coming in after Graham Potter, and how eulogised Graham Potter was that he got poached, but he only led them to mid-table. And that was a good achievement nonetheless. But for him to come in, and let's be fair, the success has been based off the back of the loan signings, but the loan signings that he has managed to bring in, you know, I don't think Swansea as a club are going to be able to bring in the same calibre of loan players without Steve Cooper as they have done in the last few seasons with Brewster, Woodman, Guehi, Morgan Gibbs-White, Conor Gallagher that have all come in and made massive impacts in the last 24 months. So for me, I think it's a shocking decision to let him go in terms of equally the fact that they've not put up a bigger fight and they've agreed to mutually terminate it, and B, that they put him in that situation where he felt he had to walk as well. So I think it's a shocking decision, to be honest, and Swansea will be a lot weaker without him, that's for sure, next season. Looking at where they could go next, you've mentioned John Eustace there, George, already. It's led to believe that he's turned the job down. John Terry's now available after leaving Aston Villa yesterday, as we record this on Tuesday morning. He's obviously never had a managerial role. But then again, Swansea have always gone for people that are a little bit left field in the fact that they gave a chance to Steve Cooper straight after winning the Under-17 World Cup of England. Graham Potter, they brought in from, was it Norway? I think it was Norway.
Ostersunds, wasn't it? Was it Sweden?
Yeah, it was Ostersunds. Sweden. Yeah, he came in from Sweden, of course. So that was, again, a left-field appointment that certainly went down brilliantly. And obviously, he's now doing really well with Brighton in the Premier League. Jody Morris is the current favourite at evens, having obviously been Frank Lampard's assistant manager at Derby and Chelsea, but now out of work. So he would be an interesting appointment as well. Where do you think they'll go with this? I'm from Swansea's point of view, I'm kind of glad Eustace has turned it down, because I feel like even a Jody Morris has got probably a little bit more experience. Although, well, Eustace is assistant manager with Mark Walton at QPR, so that's probably maybe a little bit harsh, and maybe I'm being a bit biased by the bigger name here, but where do you think they'll go with this?
Well, I think obviously we've seen in Swansea in the last couple of managerial appointments they've gone for, they've kind of gone for names that are not overly familiar to certainty club football in England. Obviously, Steve Cooper had success with the England youngsters, but I just think they seem to go for a little left field appointments, and I think that's what they might do again this time. Jody Morris is a very, very suitable one that fits that mantra, and I think he could be one they could turn to. But I think the name that sticks out to me is somebody who, you know, would go in there and do a good job. But again, would it happen with any managerial chase? There's always that question, would it happen? I think Chris Wilder is obviously the obvious one for anybody wanting a manager right now. He is the obvious choice. He's out there. He's available. I'm sure he'd be willing to get his teeth stuck in. But I don't think it's certainly one that's running close with the odds currently at 33-1 this morning as I look at it. But a name that I'm surprised hasn't crept into the frame, even on the betting list, is Gary Monk. He's been at Swansea before, bit of a club icon down there. Don't think it'd be the wisest choice myself, but they obviously have a bit of affiliation with him. Very surprised he's not made the list. But I think someone too, actually.
I didn't even think of that until you mentioned that. I'm a little bit surprised by that. Right, that seems a firefighting appointment, doesn't it?
To be fair, he did overall pretty well down there. He didn't do a bad job, but
did very good job at Swansea.
They might not want to go back over old ground again, but I think somebody maybe like a Jody Morris or John Terry, an up-and-coming manager that might have that little bit of a swagger effect about them, might be what they go for. But it's going to be very interesting to see. But personally, my choice, if I was a Swansea fan, I would be putting all my eggs in one basket and going for Chris Wilder, because I think he's just the perfect choice. But obviously, with the state that the club's in at the minute in terms of players going and things like that, it might not fancy the challenge, but we'll see what happens. But at the moment, obviously, Jody Morris is the favourite. And I think John Terry's certainly going to creep into that equation now that he left Aston Villa yesterday. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But for me, if I was a Swansea fan, I'd be luring for Chris Wilder.
Yeah, me too. But equally, I think Chris Wilder can do better given the current circumstances, because if he's not good, that's going to be a huge rebuild job now at Swansea. You think they've lost the spine of the team, the goal scorer. Now, they've still got some good players. Let's not forget that. Obviously, Jamal Lowe in particular is a standout. Jay Fulton in midfield. But without Hourihane, Grimes, Guehi, Ayew, Woodman, that's literally the spine of their team.
It is the spine.
Completely ripped out.
Their core group, their best group has gone. And it's like when you break it down, it's not as if these players that were on loan last season didn't really have an impact. They were absolutely central to what Swansea achieved, from Woodman at the back to Ayew up front. And obviously Hourihane came in January, had an unbelievable impact on that squad in the first few weeks. And like you say, it's just the spine of the team's just been ripped out of it, and they've lost their manager as well. So it's just literally everything that was so rosy for Swansea only 2 or 3 months ago now looks an absolute mess of a situation. And with what, 9-10 days to go until the start of the season, it really doesn't look promising. And for Swansea now, you have to be quite worried for them for how they could start. But sometimes these situations, they can fire players up even more to succeed. And for Swansea's fans, they'll be hoping that is the case. But I've got to be honest, I'm not convinced that it's going to be the easiest start to the season for them now that all this has gone off, especially with losing Cooper as well.
No, and I think this underlines, I wrote something actually for Yorkshire Live probably a week ago now about Huddersfield Town and the way that they'd adapted their squad since coming down from the Premier League, their relegation. And it's been similar with Swansea in the fact that both clubs have had to really shed their skin and cut the cloth to become more sustainable in after, you know, years in the Premier League, albeit Swansea were in there for a lot longer than Huddersfield were. But Huddersfield obviously cut the squad of all their big names and bought players, but obviously players of lower quality to supplement that squad. And they've struggled on the pitch, but now you would say they're looking upwards potentially. Whereas Swansea now, obviously they've had back-to-back playoff finishes and finished mid-table in the first season back down in the Championship. But it's such an ask when you bring in, when you're so reliant on Premier League loanees. It's such an ask to replenish that squad every single summer. You know, they managed to do it last year after losing Brewster and Gallagher by bringing in Morgan Gibbs-White, keeping RU, bringing in Jamal Lowe. But it's a real ask for a manager every summer. And then all of a sudden it only takes something like this, like Cooper's gone now. How are they going to replace these players? Because although, you know, Swansea is still a decent club for a breeding ground for a young player to go and get minutes, he was the pull. He was the big draw that made Premier League clubs go, yeah, we want to send our young player to Swansea for the year to develop. So it's a real challenge, and it's going to be a real struggle for them to compete for the top six next season, I think, George, as things stand.
I absolutely agree with that, without a doubt. As I said only a few minutes ago, I think it's a very, very difficult situation now for Swansea to be in so close to the start of the season. If this had happened a month ago, it would have been difficult. But for it to have happened this close to the start of a brand new campaign, especially when you're coming into it as beaten playoff finalists with the expectation there to have another go, it's quite a worrying time, and it's just not the ideal preparation at all. But on your other point about Swansea having been pretty reliant on loan players in the past, like you say, the season before last, Brewster, Ben Wilmot, Woodman, Gallagher, Guay as well, they were also key to the success they enjoyed that season under Cooper when they did get into the playoffs the first time around. And then you go back further the year before when Cameron Carter-Vickers, he played a key role in the success they had under Potter. So they have had a reliance to get these lone players in. And now the fact that they've not got Steve Cooper was obviously a bit of a pulling power to get these players. It's going to be very difficult for them. So I think a manager like Chris Wilder would be able to attract a good calibre of players to the club. But obviously, I don't think he will be the man that gets the job. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But if it's Jody Morris or John Terry, they might be able to keep that relationship with Chelsea going. So that could come into effect, and that could help them out again to unearth the next gem from Chelsea Academy, because there is plenty of prospects down there at Cobham. So it's certainly going to be interesting to see what happens. But for me, I think they are going to, certainly looking at it at this moment in time, I do think they're going to struggle to mount the top six charge this season. But depending on how things go in a few weeks, it could all change. But at the minute, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And the most frustrating thing, I think, must be for Swansea City fans is the fact that A, it's happened now, literally 10 days before the start of the season, but B, the fact that, you know, every fan has to accept that when you drop from the Premier League to the Championship, there's got to be a rebalance of finances. You're going to have to cut your costs and try and become sustainable again. But they've done that. They have still already done that. Sold McBurney for $20 million. They sold Dan James for $15 million. They sold Joe Rodon for £15 million. Like, they've already cut the cloth a lot, in fact. So this does feel like the owner's just being unambitious rather than the harsh reality of we've just got to cut our cloth. And I think Steve Cooper probably would have accepted that. But when you're selling his best players from under him, when you probably don't need to financially, given all that money I've just spoken about, they've recouped, you know, to lose Grimes for £4 million to Fulham is a decent fee. And obviously he's got 1 year left on his contract, and we don't know where his head is at, whether he was going to sign a new contract. I suspect not, given that, you know, if you're looking for an ambition from owners to say, you know, you should commit your long-term future here, he's not had that. So why would you not go to Fulham where you can get more wages and a more ambitious club? So I think that would be the big frustration for me if I was a Swansea City fan.
And it's a very good point what you've raised there about Swansea not necessarily being a club struck for cash, because I'm just looking at the list of players that they've sold in the last 2 or 3 years in front of me now. And some of the names that they've let go, Lucas Fabianski to West Ham, about £7 million. Alfie Mawson to Fulham, £15 million. Kyle Bartley to West Brom, £4 million. Sam Clucas to Stoke for £6 million. They've earned some bloody big revenue from player sales in comparison to other Championship clubs in the last few years. So you do have to look at the owner and think, is this a lack of ambition? Because the money is there, yeah. I appreciate that money from transfer fees is not directly inputted back into bringing new players in. It's got to keep the infrastructure of the club going, and especially after what's happened in the last 12, 18 months where obviously turnstiles haven't been shifting, then you've got to weigh up your costs. But even prior to that time, Swansea have just not been showing enough ambition for the money they've been bringing in, and it is a shame. And you do have to look at it from Steve Cooper's position and think, right, if they're not going to invest in the squad with the success I've brought on literally a shoestring, I'm off. So it's a great shame because the money is there to be spent. And Swansea, if they realistically wanted to have a good go at it, they could.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast.
For the final part of this week's pod, we're going to have a quick flick back through some of the biggest and most eye-catching transfer business that's gone off in the last week. After we did some of that in last week's, well, in the pod we did a fortnight ago, we're going to have a look at some of the other deals. And I want to start with Fulham because they've opened their account after previously not bringing anyone in. And they've spent £12 million on Harry Wilson. And I promise I'm not going to get into a huge financial fair play and parachute payment rant, at least not yet, maybe later on. But £12 million on Harry Wilson. They've also brought in Gazzaniga on a free transfer, but albeit is going to be high wages by Championship standard. And Matt Grimes is on his way for £4 million. So first and foremost, from a Fulham point of view, they needed some refreshment. They needed some more bodies. Grimes is a really good signing in midfield. He'll complement Harrison Reed and Tom Kearney nicely. And Josh Onuma back fit again as well. So that... they're well stocked in midfield now, and Grimes obviously was such a big favourite for us last season. We really enjoyed watching him. He was one of the Championship standout performers in midfield. What have you made of those few deals? Obviously, Harry Wilson's such a weird one because on his day, obviously, he's probably a Premier League player, but he just didn't show it, and he didn't pull up any major trees at Cardiff. His numbers were decent, but you've got to remember that was also supplemented by the fact he scored a hat-trick on the final day, which still counts, of course it does, but it's not a fair reflection of the impact across the season. And he didn't really offer them that much. He didn't get in the team sometime. And you think a player like Harry Wilson should be walking into that Cardiff team, really, with his technical ability. And I wonder whether a change of role might suit him, maybe rather than playing on the wing. Perhaps a more number 10 central role might be the best to get the most out of him. But if they're bringing in Grimes as well, that's probably unlikely. But they're well stocked out wide now. They're going to have Deco Dover, Reed, of course, Cavallero, Knockhart, and Wilson all vying for spots. So certainly an expensively assembled forward line there for Fulham, with Mitrovic leading the line.
Yeah, you could say that. And I think, to be honest with you, going for Harry Wilson, as talented as a player as he is on his day, and like you say, at Cardiff last year, we didn't really talk about him a lot because he wasn't really producing the goods that he had at Derby a few years ago, but his underlying numbers were pretty good when you broke them down at the end of the season. So it is a good sign for any Championship club. It's a great sign. He's a great player. But was a winger, unless he's going to convert into a number 10, as you said, is a winger really a necessity for Fulham at such a high cost with the players that they've got? Like, you just broke it down there. They've got nothing.
I don't think they needed a goalkeeper either. I don't know why they brought goalkeeper. Mike Rodot was fantastic in the Championship. And then he got binned off in the Premier League for Areola. Now, don't get me wrong, Areola literally is, you know, won the Champions League with PSG. He's a top-quality goalkeeper. But coming back into the Championship, Marek Rodot, if you were Marek Rodot, you'd be fuming, wouldn't you?
You would be, because he did very well. Even when he was at Rotherham, I rated him, Marek Rodot.
Yeah,
he was a good
me too.
Keeper there, and he did well at Fulham a couple of years ago. And obviously, Gazzaniga's come in. He's not played a lot of football in the last few years, whilst at Tottenham, obviously, being number two to Lloris for 4 years. And at 29, he's now going to want to lay down his roots and lay down a marker. So he's, you would think, going to be the club's first choice. The number one shirt's available, so it's likely he'll get that. So you are going to be a little bit miffed if you're Marek Rodot going into this new season. But obviously, I said a couple of weeks ago that out of the three relegated sides that came down last season, Fulham was the one that I was finding it most difficult to weigh up a judgment of whether in thinking, are they going to really go for it? Are they going to be capable of mounting a charge? And I think a lot of that ponders around Marco Silva, whether he'll get to grips with it, because we know he's been a bit hit and miss in his career so far. So I think, looking at it, I think Harry Wilson is an excellent sign. I really do. I think he's a great player. I've always been a big fan of him. I think Matt Grimes will really slot him well there for the type of football that Fulham are going to, you would think, play. And they are going to dominate a lot of games in possession with the players that they've got. But I still think that squad is in need of a bit of a refresh. I think there's a lot of players that need moving on. I think it's a big squad. I think there's some positions that are overly bolstered in comparison to others. Will Mitrovic stay? We'll see. But I still think it's hard to weigh up a judgment on them. I think, like I say, Marco Silva, there's just something about him that, like we've said in the past couple of weeks ago or so, where if a bigger offer comes in, he always seems tempted. And it might, if he gets off to a good start, Premier League clubs come perhaps sniffing, might knock him off his balance a bit and lose that concentration. So it's going to be a very interesting one to see with Fulham. They've got a very good squad, a very good set of individual players there that can make things happen. right throughout the team. They've got a good squad, so they should be up there. They should be challenging, but at this moment in time, not overly convinced that they will set the league alight where they realistically should be for the players that they've got.
No, they might be a bit of a slow burner like Watford, I fear, into the new season. Because there's so much quality in that squad. It's such a big squad. Can you imagine what their wage bill's like? Like, you think of the midfielders they've got that probably won't even play in Anguissa, who's quality and probably is too good for Championship level and probably won't play. But he'll probably end up just on a season-long loan somewhere. Seri's still at the club. He'll be on about, what, 50-plus grand a week. Their wage bill must be astronomical. And they're gonna, and it's going to be players that won't even play in the Championship, and then they can just go out and spend £4 million to bring in Matt Grimes. It baffles me. The thing for me is, and I am going to go on a bit of a rant here, is, you know, parachute payments were not brought in to reward failure. And exactly. the way I look at it, and I'm not saying there's a right or wrong. Well, I suppose I am, really. But you've got one approach, like Sheffield United, for example, who've come down from the Premier League, 2 years in there, and they're using their parachute payments to plug the gap because of the vast drop in revenue from the Premier League to the Championship. That's what they were designed for. Then you've got clubs like Fulham, who are going for the boom or bust approach, where we're going to chuck £12 million on a signing. There probably won't be £12 million spent across the accumulative other 23 clubs this summer. So that lets, you know, in this post-pandemic transfer market, that's a hell of a lot of money to be chucking around in the Championship. I don't think £12 million will be spent between the other 23 clubs. So for me, it just feels like the parachute payments at the minute are designed to reward failure. You know, you remember when Stoke came down, what, 3 years ago now? They spent £50 million buying Benik Afobe, James McClain, players like that, on big wages as well. And, you know, if Fulham don't go up this season or next season, they're going to have a serious problem with financial fair play and a fire sale. And you can just see it's just boom up. It's such a risky strategy where someone like Sheffield United, albeit Fulham might be in a better spot because they've been able to bring in Harry Wilson this summer, for example. Sheffield United won't have these court cases and financial fair play issues 2 years down the line. And it doesn't sit with me that how the parachute payments are used currently, or certainly the contrast with how they're used by some clubs, which is how they should be used to plug the gap and equally, you know, give yourself a year to get rid of these players that are on big money. Because it's not always easy, and we don't want clubs being, you know, financially exploited where they've got to let players go for a cut price because they have to get them off the wage bill. But equally, it shouldn't be, you know, giving clubs a transfer fund to go and spend 12, you know, £16 million on two Championship players in this post-pandemic market. It doesn't sit right with me. And I think we've seen with the general trend of Championship clubs that have come down in the last 2 years. Look at Norwich. The main aim was keep hold of all our players and we'll add a couple of Premier League loans, and that was the best way to get back up. Yes, they sold Ben Godfrey, of course, but they kept Buendia, they kept Todd Cantwell, Pookie, of course. And I think it's the best way to go. And Sheffield United are going down that route as well. And the fact that they're trying to hold on to Aaron Ramsdale, Sander Berge, and they haven't brought anyone in because the market they're looking at to bring players in is so small, because they want, essentially, all the deals in the Championship have been done by mid-table clubs of players who won't get into their team, won't get into their squad. And any players that would cost a huge fee like Matt Grimes for £4 million. Sheffield United haven't got £4 million to go and spend on Matt Grimes. So they're looking for Championship loans or clubs where, like Aston Villa, for example, if Aston Villa get the business done, they might decide in 2 weeks' time, right, Conor Hourihan can go again on loan. And Sheffield United would then, and have been linked with him, and then would make the move. And I just think it's the more sustainable way to do things. I worry how Fulham, for example, and we've seen other clubs, so I'm not just picking on Fulham, but it's the obvious example, how things will crash and burn badly if they don't go up in these next 2 years. And it has given them some success. They've had two promotions in, what, the last 4 years, under Jurcanovic and then under Scott Parker. So it's clearly working for them. But when it doesn't work, it's going to go badly wrong.
Without a doubt, it's going to go very, very wrong. And I was going to touch upon it before you mentioned it, about when Norwich came down at the end of the season before last. And you always felt that Norwich would be in a very good position to bounce straight back up without spending millions, because they'd already got a good basis and they've got such a clever recruitment strategy that you knew would work. And it did. It worked to perfection. Obviously, Jamal Lewis moved on, Godfrey moved on. But like you say, they kept their main star assets in Buendia and Pookie, and got some very good issues through the door. Oliver Skipp being one was an absolutely outstanding signer and worked a treat. So Norwich have found a way, but Fulham, they always have been, certainly since Obviously, they had that long spell in the Premier League, certainly when myself and you were younger. But since they dropped into the Championship about 2013, 14, whatever it was, something around that time, they've been a bit of a yo-yo club. They've been up and down. And it has basically been chuck it all at it or bust. And luckily so far, it has worked on more occasions than not. But this time, it just feels a little bit different to me. I think there's something not quite sitting right. Obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of what goes off at that club day to day. I don't follow Fulham like Fulham fans will, obviously. So I can't really judge them too much. But from my perspective, looking in from afar, I just don't feel confident that they are going to certainly run away with it this season like they should for the players that they've got. But time will tell. Wilson, Gazzaniga, good signings for any Championship side. Really good additions. But like I say, it's a lot of money to spend. Another 4 million going on Grimes, and you can guarantee that they'll probably look to bring one or two more in, certainly once they've offloaded a few. But like you say, it's that wage bill. It must be absolutely through the roof. It's massive. The players that they've got there, Mitrovic, Kearney, Knockaert, they're not going to be on a small wage weekly. So it's a very difficult time for Fulham in a financial sense. But if they get it right, then they'll be the ones laughing at us. But if it goes wrong, it could be very damaging indeed.
Yeah, and just, I think this is why, as Championship neutrals, it gives us that little bit more satisfaction when clubs like Brentford get promoted in a sustainable way with a clever business model. You know, there's no right or wrong ways to do things, and we're not picking on Fulham and other clubs that have done it this way, but you just know that it won't last forever and the gravy train will eventually run dry, which is not what we want to see. You know, we don't want this to happen, but it just concerns me when. And I think, you know, more and more clubs are going down the Brentford model and it works. And I'd like to see more clubs do that and use the parachute payment sustainably, if possible. But we'll move on from Craven Cottage. And I want to go and talk about Middlesbrough because I have been super impressed with their business this summer. We've spoken already about Ikpeazu and how I think, and we all really rated that deal and we think he might be a bit of a snip. They brought in Matt Crooks from Rotherham United. And to me, this screams Callum Patterson of 17-18 when Cardiff got promoted under Neil Warnock. Goal-scoring midfielder, bit of a utility man. And they've got him for £1.1 million, which seems a really, really good deal. I think he'll add goals to their midfield. He'll add a physical presence. He's a very Neil Warnock kind of player. And I just think, you know, for what, under £2 million to bring in Ikpeazu and Matt Crooks, I think it's really, really good business and typical Warnock signings. You can see how they'll fit into this Middlesbrough team as well.
Well, you took the words directly out of my mouth. I was going to say it is just a typical traditional Neil Warnock signing down to a T, and that's exactly what he's done. I think it's a great addition. I think it's very similar to the time when Cardiff robbed Rotherham of Will Vaux. I think very, very underrated players in terms of what they were doing at Rotherham, and people who watch Rotherham frequently could see that these two were seriously onto something. Obviously, Vaux has proved himself at Cardiff, and I think Matt Crooks will...
Jay at West Brom as well.
Yeah, Rotherham have produced some good players in the last few years, and this is another one. Like you say, Matt Crooks, 6 goals last season, 3 assists in the Championship, but his game is about just so much more than just those statistics. Obviously, you look at those stats and they don't think, wow, for a midfielder, but he was about so much more. He was the heartbeat of that Rotherham team for a long spell of last season. It's just a brilliant sign. And like you say, it just brings it all together of what Middlesbrough have done so far. They've not spent a fortune, but they've recruited wisely and recruited very, very well. And I think there's certainly going to be a few more coming in. I think there's certainly room for a few loan signings in there from Premier League clubs. I don't exactly know what Neil Warnock's wanting, what else he wants to bolster, but I'd imagine he will, I would think, want to bring another striker in, I would have thought, to complement Ikpeazu. But overall, I think Sami Amiobi, I think that's another really good sign on a free transfer, Championship experience, good quality player. And again, it's another one that you can just see, a bit like Nathaniel Mendes-Lang was. You know that Warnock will get the very best out of him. He's a winger that obviously he's had a few clubs flitted about a bit, but Neil Warnock, he'll get him on the straight and narrow and he'll get him doing what Neil Warnock wants from his players. And I don't think many teams, certainly not many, can say that they've had a better window so far than Borough, because, like you say, they've recruited so well, they've not spent a fortune. And they've just brought in players that know the league. They know what Neil Warnock will expect of them. And I just think it's just got all the ingredients to work. And I think Middlesbrough this season could be one of the surprise packages if they had a good, proven striker.
Yeah, I think they could do with another forward to complement it. Piazza, someone that can perhaps is a little bit smaller, a bit nippier, someone who can stretch the defence a little bit more. Obviously, Duncan Watmore did such a good job coming in last season.
He did.
So he'll obviously add firepower. So you're looking at Amiobi, Watmore and Piazza as a front three, as a fluid interchanging set up, certainly between the wingers. So that's really exciting. And when you think they've got so much championship now, so with McNair, Johnny Howson, Sam Morsy, Matt Crooks in midfield, and then as say McNair, Fry, Bowler, Dyke Steele, and Joe Lumley in goal. That's a really good team, and it's a strong spine, and Neil Warnock side. And I think Middlesbrough, without giving too much away ahead of our 1-24s next week, I think they'll be serious contenders for the playoffs next season. Another club that's done some really good business, or continued to do their really good business, is Queen's Park Rangers. They brought in Stefan Johansson this week after, you know, supplementing the likes of Charlie Austin and others that have come in. They've done some really good business this summer. Probably, again, could do with adding another nippy forward just to complement the Austin Dykes dynamic. But they've got the likes of Chris Willock, Elias Chair, that can, you know, play in those attacking roles. And Moses Odabagio is going to sign as well, it looks like, as the right wing back to replace Todd Kane. Obviously, we know plenty about him at Sheffield Wednesday. It didn't work for him there, it's fair to say, but there is a player in there. There was a player that did really well at Hull and at Brentford before he had his knee injury. Struggled defensively for Sheffield Wednesday, in particular in a right-back role, but if QPR continue with the 3-5-2, which we expect them to next season, I think that right wing-back role, he's clearly got the player quality to play that position. And I think also having confidence, you know, he's a confidence player for me. So if he's playing regularly, feels loved, I think the performances then flow, and he's got an absolute screamer against Manchester United, in which QPR won 4-2, which was probably not what you'd expect. And, you know, that Manchester United 11 that they beat cost £171 million. So it wasn't the reserves that QPR beat. So again, I think QPR will be knocking on that playoff door, George.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Obviously ended last season in such a fantastic fashion, but in fairness, it wasn't just the end of the season, it was the whole of the second half of last season. They were absolutely terrific, and the form they put together, and it just clicked in that second half of the campaign. And like you say, it's just come together so brilliantly for QPR this summer. They've made some absolutely fantastic signs, some really, really shrewd additions, I think. Obviously, Johansson coming back permanently is a great addition. I've always been a big fan of him. Austin will provide the goals. I think Andre Dezel, he's a player with a little bit of talent in there, a bit of a prospect that will probably develop well at QPR. Jordan Arch is a good established championship keeper to challenge Senny Dieng. Jimmy Dunn as well did well at Sunderland a couple of years ago on loan. They've recruited very, very well, it must be said. They've brought some good players in to add to what is already a very talented squad. When you break it down, I mean, you look what they've got in there. They've got Lyndon Dykes, who proved himself in the second half of last season that he can score goals at this level. Elias Chair improved last year. And at the back, you've already got a brilliant, solid foundation in Lee Wallace, Rob Dickey, Johan Barbe, Device. They've got a really good side, QPR, now. And all of a sudden, they've gone from being a side that we thought at this time last year were going to be relegated last season. Me and you were absolutely convinced of it. We were really, really worried about them. And now, 12 months on, we're thinking, is a playoff charge in sight? And personally, I think it's a very, very good chance. And on Odabagio as well, you're saying if he feels loved and will play regularly, it will work for him. And as well as that, he's worked with Mark Warburton before at Brentford. They know each other inside out. So I think it's going to happen. It's a recipe for success. And good luck to him. His time at Sheffield Wednesday didn't go particularly well, but there is a player in there, as you say. He was brilliant at Hull, played a key role in them getting promoted in 2015-16. So he is, on his day, he's a very, very good player at this level. And I've always rated him. He's got goals in him as well, as he proved the other day against Manchester United. He scored a lot for Leighton Orient a few years ago. So good luck to QPR, because things are looking very rosy for them. And I think for me, I think they could certainly run the surprise packages this season in what I think is going to be a very open division this year. But we'll talk about that more next week.
We certainly will. How many surprise packages are you having, out of curiosity? Because that's two that you've already mentioned.
That's two. Well, I think we've got to go with Birmingham as well, to be fair.
Keep a lid on it. We'll keep a lid on it for next week.
We don't want to give
away all the trade secrets. Final one that I just want to touch on, that's not actually a deal that's happened, but Tom Huddleston's back in football. He's training with Hull City at the minute after, you know, he's not played since he got released by Derby last year, so he's had a full season out. But obviously, his affiliation with Hull City, he's now training with them, played in their pre-season match at the weekend. I forgot who it was against off the top of my head, but yeah, so they won 1-0. Sorry.
Someone.
They beat someone 1-0. And Huddersfield played the first 45 minutes, and by all accounts, put in a really good display. And obviously, there's that history with Hull. He played for them in the Premier League, scored that great goal in the 6-0 win that they had over Fulham, I think, or it might be Bolton all those years ago, where he cut his hair after he scored. And he was on the cusp of England not that long ago. He was a great player.
Yeah, he was good at Tottenham.
In the mid-noughties. Really good at Tottenham. He was a bit underappreciated at Tottenham. But, you know, he's now, what, 34, 35? But it could be an interesting one. Could add that little bit extra quality for Hull if they can get him, you know, match right. And obviously the affiliation with the club also makes it a bit of an emotional homecoming, potentially.
Yeah, I think, obviously, Tom Huddleston, as you just outlined there, he's a player with a lot of experience, a lot of talent. But obviously, he's getting on a little bit now, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But I do think for Hull, obviously, the situation they're in, where obviously they can't do an awful lot in terms of recruitment at the minute, I think it could be a wise move to bring him back. He knows the place, the fans know him, and they know what he can do. But obviously, he's aged a little bit since then. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think on a free transfer, I think it's very, very low risk for Hull City with the situation they're in, and a bit of experience for any side coming up from League One is key. It's vital to everyone. So we'll see what happens with that one. But as I say, I think if you were looking at a mid-end, top-end championship side, you'd probably be pulling a face at it thinking, what are they doing? But in Hull's situation, just coming up from League One, obviously finances tight, can't do a lot, bringing new faces in, I think it would make a lot of sense.
It was Scunthorpe they beat. I've just Googled it. They beat Scunthorpe 1-0. Thanks to an Andy Cannon. I'll not say Cannon. I'll say Rocket. Never mind. It's probably a good point to wrap this week's podcast up. Thank you for those that have listened and for tuning in as always. As I say, just another quick reminder, we are running a competition at the moment on our social channels at ChampChatPod24. You have to retweet our pinned tweet and follow us as well to be in with a chance of winning a 21-22 championship strip of your choice. As always, thank you for listening, and make sure you are subscribed across this podcast feed and in your podcast app of choice, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ChampChatPod24. We'll be back next week with our highly anticipated 1-24s as we reveal all ahead of the season kicking off on August the 7th. Thank you, have a good week, and we'll catch you again very soon.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.